for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 597 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Paul Cornell, who has a new comic called Con and On, and the premiere installment of this five-issue miniseries has just been released by Ahoy Comics. It's described this way. Con and On is the romance of every big convention, the bittersweet journey through time and success, the highs and the lows, and the silliness. It's the story of every fan and every pro, and everyone who's just trying to make a buck in the midst of extremity. Through the narratives of our large cast of characters, we see how some things have changed and how some things have stayed exactly the same. We talk about Paul's con experiences as well as what inspired this book, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy this great discussion. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Paul Cornell has written episodes of terrific television, including Elementary, Doctor Who, Primeval, Robin Hood, and his own children's show called Wavelength, and has written many good comics, including Saucer State for IDW and Batman and Robin, Wolverine and Young Avengers, and he's got his own comic coming out called Con and On from Ahoy Comics. And it sounds like it's going to be a great, fun subject to delve into. So how you doing, Paul?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you? Thank you for having me on this evening.
It's great to talk with you. Well, why don't we just dive right in and get and talk about Con and On. I love the name, by the way. I think that's funny.
I think it was Nisbeth Miles who came up with it. Or it certainly wasn't me anyway. Me and Tom Payer, the editor, were going back and forth for ages on what we could call this.
Okay. Now, according to the information, of course, it just came out as we're recording this. It's right out, and it's called Con and On. It's five-issue miniseries from Ahoy, and it's the story of five different years in the life of the festival, 1 year per issue, spanning three decades from the points of view of a diverse bunch of disparate people whose lives revolve around the greatest show on Earth.
And I want to that this is that. About the comics industry and the huge comic conventions, and which I really love. And this is covering something like three decades across five issues. And what I wanted to show was how much the comics industry has changed across that time and how much it damn well hasn't. And I wanted to do leaps of years between each issue so we can see the progress of individual characters and many of whom are comics creators
or the regress of some characters.
Well, and not everybody gets out of this alive, it must be said.
I haven't seen many deaths at a comic convention, so this will be something new and something interesting to see. Now, my understanding, it says meet close friends Eddie and is it Deja?
Deja,
aspiring young comics talents whose ambitions threaten to tear them apart. Anthony, Donna, and Finn, brilliant, boozy, and bombastic British creators, and all the crusty veteran editors, forgotten TV stars, and enthusiastic fans who make the convention experience something to revisit year after year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good description of our cast. I've got three representatives of first wave British comic creators in the U.S., we've got a dapper person, a dapper man, a cosmic explorer, and a wild man. And I think that covers basically everyone from British comics. And this is a tragicomic satire It's got heart to it. It's built around things that actually happened to me at conventions and anecdotes I've heard from others. And it's all of that wonderful convention lore brought to life. And especially for our two young creators and our three Brits, life gives them quite a roller coaster across those five issues.
Okay, so I guess we're going to see how the con circuit has progressed over the years. Because as I remember, I have a roommate who has been to cons for many years, and he told me that when he went to his first con, it was in the basement of a hotel and had comics creators that I could mention and you'd probably recognize.
Yeah.
But it was, and you could, there was no lines. You could just go up and pay them to do a drawing for you and kind of things like that. And
well, our first issue was in 1992. And even at that point, you could get into one of the big conventions with a queue, a line of half an hour, and you could buy your ticket on the door.
Wow.
There's a wonderful issue of Iron Man from the 1970s where he goes to San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And it's literally people standing in a line in front of a little wooden table, paying their money and having somebody write their names down in a book. And mm-hmm. there's a coffee urn and a Labrador. And it's teeny tiny.
Wow.
That's, with Ray Bradbury, Jack Kirby.
Yep. I could mention the names, but I won't, of the folks that were in that one. I didn't come in until later. The cons that I started going to were, I mostly got to talk to the mid-range people, not the Jack Kirby's and the people like that. So I never got to see those kind of people. So, but this is how you started your experience, right? You started going to these smaller cons at that
time. Yeah, I've been to conventions for decades, but I started going to San Diego and New York in the 90s. And I suppose that is decades now. But I love con life. I love how intense the experiences are, how many memories get made, and it's a wonderful combination of fun and business. So you don't feel too guilty about just having fun for a whole weekend because you're also, having meetings that might change your life. Where else do you get to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's that potential for enormous drama that made me think, well, people haven't really written about this, so somebody should write about this. And, I think a comics audience especially appreciate comics anecdotary.
Now, did you go as a fan first, or were you already a professional when you went to cons?
I went as a fan, but, I've never had a proper job, so I've always either been wanting to be a professional or being a professional. And I've been writing, it's been a long time, and my entire life has kind of been devoted to telling stories. So apart from half a day where I put frozen chunks of meat through a circular saw and I quit at lunchtime. So I can't say I've never had a proper job. I've had half a day of a proper job.
Well, that's good. I mean, that kind of helps you to understand both sides of the table, as I like to call it.
It's life experience. I thought, by lunchtime, I've had my life experience. I'm done. I've had enough to inform me for a lifetime of writing what I know.
Well, that's great. So you've actually watched the progression of conventions and things like that, because you've mentioned some of the biggest ones is like San Diego. The first time I went to San Diego, I didn't prepare. I didn't walk ahead of time and stuff like that. And when I got there, I had no idea what I was in for. And I ended up walking all over downtown San Diego, the con center up and down the downtown. And I went to get a bus pass. And the lady there, she says, "You're here for the comic convention, aren't you?" And I said, well, yeah. I said, you know, we hate it when you guys come here.
Oh,
I said, what? I said, what? I said, and then she says, well, you know, we can't even go downtown, our own downtown, when you guys are here.
Yeah, I've felt that feeling. Just at the bars on the edge, you know, you hear stuff you do not hear in the middle. But on the other hand, it's only a weekend, and we are bringing an enormous amount of money into the town.
That's the other side. I was riding on the bus that I got the pass for, and I was going back home that night, and I was sitting on the bus with all these ladies that worked in the food courts and stuff like that. And I mentioned to them what this lady had told me. She said, oh, no, don't believe that. We make all this money when you guys come here, and we love it when you come. So come back every time you can, they said.
Oh, yeah, and also there is that thing of it's not just the money, but, you know, it brightens up any place quite a lot, I would have thought, to have all those cosplayers about. And, I love San Diego in particular. There's something about, I think about the setting, the Bayside thing, that really pleases me. And I find New York a bit alienating because there aren't really recognized social centers. And you're kind of stuck out on a pier on a promontory, and the convention doesn't really extend further than the convention center. Whereas in San Diego, it, you know, takes over the whole town.
That's right. That's exactly the way that. Now I'm just the opposite, though. New York is my favorite.
Ah,
I like to go to New York because you get all this amazing stuff. You can buy the glasses that have the superheroes printed on them, and you can talk to. You go to Artist Alley, and there's this massive gallery of people you can talk with and get autographs from and buy their books from. And the interesting thing, when I was in New York, you know, if you like walk a block or two away, they have no idea that the convention's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I went into the, you know, you take the subway and stuff, and there was a guy wearing a Hulk costume, and everybody just sort of ignored him.
Well, you know? Yeah, I mean, it's New York.
They're used to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The thing that was funny about San Diego to me was that I was walking around downtown, and I have to say, I was there for the better part of a week, and I have to, it struck me sort of odd. After a while, I kind of got like, oh, there's more people with costumes walking around. They're not, it's not regular people, you know. And I actually got to the place where I was a little tired of seeing people wearing costumes walking all over the place.
I love that feeling of our people invaded and took over a small town. It's there's something about the wraps that cover the buildings that I find romantic and delightful.
Because you see, like, video game stuff, you see. There was like the DC had started up a streaming service that you could go in and you could sign up for it, and they would you could buy memberships and do all these kinds of things, and it was amazing. The thing that always happens when I go to San Diego, though, I'm exhausted for a week or two afterwards.
I have got my 10,000 steps in on one occasion by 11 a.m. And it's very good for my health, I think. I mean, certain other things I do in San Diego are not so good for my health, but the amount of exercise I get is brilliant.
Now, you mentioned something that I don't think a lot of fans understand goes on at conventions. You know, when you're behind the table and you're dealing with other creators, a lot of things that are going to happen in the future are set to happen because of conversations and things that have gone on behind the tables. And, you know, you guys go out and party at night and talk, and there's all kinds of things going on where you get to interact with other creators and stuff. And like 6 months, 8 months down, or a year down the road, you see the result of those conversations.
Favorite thing. We have our nooks and crannies. We have our places we meet. And, you know, usually I will have a dance card full of meetings for San Diego, and I'll be running between them, literally running in a lot of cases. And because obviously there's, you know, there's simply no other form of transport to get you from coffee bar A to coffee bar B. Mm-hmm. No, I love that. I love the hunting. I love the, the pitching and the social life of creators. You know, when you get a bunch of freelancers together, and only freelancers really understand other freelancers' issues, and so that's always an amazing feeling.
Well, it's a lot of fun, I have to say, because I've been on both sides of the table. I've helped some creators actually sell their wares and do stuff like that. So I've been on that side where I've had to do my little pitchings to. I was at a con, and there was I had this little spiel I had to say, and I gave the first line, and the guy on the other side of the table held up his hand and said, "Stop." He says, "Don't say anything else. I'm going to buy the book."
Well, there we are. That's handy.
And I said, okay. So, because other times I've had to talk for 15, 20 minutes and try to explain why you should add this to your collection, good things like that.
I've never been I do. For Thought Bubble, I have a table. But largely because I love that audience. And, it's more like I remember Peter David, when he had his health, used to just get a table with nothing to sell on it, just to meet people. And, I kind of get that. You know, if you just plonk yourself down in one place and let the audience come to you, it's a great way to meet your audience. But I can do that on Thought Bubble. I don't think I could do that in San Diego. It would be a bit too intense.
I don't
present a moving target.
So you don't table at San Diego or New York. You only do it at Thought Bubble.
Mm.
Okay.
But I'm doing signing sessions and stuff, because that's an hour of the intense stuff. And there's always one person you run into multiple times across the weekend, and one person you expected to see who you never see. And I've had some amazing chases after particular things or things that just built and built across the weekend of projects that came together. But what Con and On is largely about is we not only have our group of creator characters, you know, we've got a minor TV actor, we've got the Brits, we've got the two young creators, but we've got two toddlers in the first issue who grew up across the five issues. And we check in with the bicycle rickshaw people and the cleaners and the security staff. And, we sort of cover the whole gamut. I'm actually in, I think, issue 3 or issue 4, because I had a harmless anecdote where I was the butt of the joke, and I thought I might as well just have it be me. And I asked Marika if she wanted to draw herself into the comic as well, and I think she has too.
But
she makes me look much more handsome than in real life. But there's Marika is wonderful. She's got a real – she gave us character designs that were immediately right, which was amazing. And she's got really good character acting, and she can really portray the atmosphere of what scenes from Comic-Cons are like. One of the things we do is we have a commentary track. The last thing I do when writing the lettering draft, having seen the finished art for every issue, is I write, there's a historian of the future who's writing a commentary track on the comic. And she knows everything that's going to happen to these characters. And so she's writing about them from the perspective of the future. And that lends another layer of distance and irony to the whole thing. Where, in the first issue she says, well, here are two people who you all know very well from an award-winning documentary talking about our two kid leads. And, it's it can get pointed. We do give certain things a real kicking where they deserve them. But there's also a lot of heart and romance to the comic about how much we all love these big experiences too. I think there'll be a lot here that's recognisable to people, that if you've been to a comic convention, or if even if you just want to, but, you know, there's... It's that shared culture of all of us who are in comics.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's the convention is that it's focused on is called Vista Al Mar Comics Festival. Mm-hmm. And it's in California, and I have a feeling I know which one that's referring to. But
well, it could be anyone, couldn't it? It is a satirical depiction of a completely unreal event.
Okay. So I'm just curious, the characters that are in there, the two main ones, are they based on people that you know, or are they kind of creations of your imagination?
Well, they're kind of creations of my imagination. They include aspects of all sorts of creators. Eddie is me to some extent, though I never did anything as awful as he does in the first issue. And, you know, he's a gauche creator who came to success far too early and didn't know what to do with it. And, you know, I think the more negative aspects of my experiences in comics, which are largely my own damn fault, are very much reflected in Eddie. And okay. And he, I think I learned and he doesn't.
But okay.
Anyway, so those two are on course for vastly different trajectories. And I wanted all of these characters to include a lot of different real-world figures, to stand for a lot of different people. And I think there are a lot of Eddies in the world of comics, myself included.
Well, I love the brilliant, boozy, and bombastic British creators.
Mm.
I like those. And I won't ask who Anthony, Don, and Finn might resemble.
Well, I think they each resemble about eight people, honestly, at least. You know, that's the thing. They're literally not meant to be specific individuals. They're meant to be types that cover a lot of people. And but equally, they're all basically lovely. And we don't get to know them well enough to really know that in the first issue. But... Mm-hmm. Certainly, my experience of British creators of that wave is that, you know, I've grown to really like some of them and really count some of them as friends. And I think there was something specific about the British experience of suddenly going to the States and seeing that level of fame that, you know, is kind of a one-off. After that, it became much more of a regular thing for Brits to do. But that first wave had big experiences, and I wanted to show some of those.
You mentioned forgotten TV stars, and I find that interesting because I've been to some conventions, and when I talk to the folks who run them, they often say that the biggest part of the convention is the TV people. Or yeah, the movie stars and stuff like that. There was one con organizer who told me that it was actually like only a third of the people who come actually go for the comics people, but most of them come for TV or movie stars.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's human nature, really. I've never understood this dislike of having movie and TV things at big comics conventions. I mean, even if you took away the movie and TV stuff, there's still 13 strands of programming all about comics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still more comics in one place than in any other place on Earth. And I don't think it detracts from anything. I think it adds to the experience and the romance of it. And many a time my friends have rushed back into a bar to shouting, "I saw so-and-so." And that's part of the joy of it, really.
Mm-hmm. Any stars that you remember fondly or that surprised you?
I worked for Stan Lee. And,
oh, wow.
He was extraordinary. I worked on his line for Boom Studios, and I think we all assumed that he was going to be a kind of distant figurehead. But no, he had emergency dental surgery on the morning of our panel, and that meant he arrived just 10 minutes late, this 80-something-year-old man. Bursting into the back of the hall, shouting Excelsior, and gave us all this huge selling speech, which made everything sound brilliant. And then backstage, he was all, you've got to do this, 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 and this. He was all immediately precision and detail. And I had, you know, 2-hour-long transatlantic phone calls with him about the scripts, where I think I got 2 sentences in edgeways. You know, he was full of energy and just not just the great salesman, but also a really big editorial talent. And put those two things together at once, he was everything people, you know, say he was. And I was privileged to have worked for him, privileged to meet him.
So what did you do for him? I mean, did you help make his appearances happen, or
I wrote a comic for him. I wrote a comic called Soldier Zero for a line he edited.
Oh, wow. Mm. Wow. That's pretty cool. So does he actually make an appearance in the comic?
No, he was literally in charge of the line. Boom gave him his own line of comics.
Wow.
I never got a photo. It's been my greatest regret that I thought it was perhaps unprofessional to say, can I have a selfie, please? And I really should have.
I was interviewing somebody who had worked with Neil Adams, and I said, did you ever get Neil Adams to draw like your image? And he said, oh, no, I wouldn't waste his ability on that, he said.
Yeah, I know these things that hold us back, eh?
It's kind of funny like that. So this is the first issue is coming out. It's going to be monthly, right?
Yeah, 5 issues once a month. And like all Ahoy comics, one of the things I love about Ahoy is they make proper little magazines. There's all sorts of bonus stuff in the back. They're running a Grant Morrison serial across a few of their titles in prose. You always get a little extra with Ahoy, and I really love that.
Because it's a more of a reading experience instead of just looking at the images. You actually get to read words, which I kind of like. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
So is this going to be the first? Do you have any plans for maybe another Kananon series?
Well, let's see how this one goes. But it would be a different group of characters because the last issue gets us pretty much up to the present day. But you never know. I think there's more material out there. I think this perhaps has legs. Let's see how it goes.
Okay, sounds good. Any chance this might get, because you have written for television, any chance this could be turned into a TV series?
Why not? I mean, I haven't done anything about it because of the strike. But, you know, again, you never know.
Right, right. So this is going on. I'm sure it's going to do very well because conventions are experiences that people should always get to enjoy. So I think it's wonderful about that. Are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Well, actually, I'm doing another thing for Ahoy. I've got a couple of stories in a forthcoming anthology for them called Project Cryptid, which are funny stories about bizarre creatures from the real world. And I chose the Mongolian death worm, of course, before anybody else could. And I've got a serial running on my Substack at the moment. I'm doing a sequel to my Witches of Lichford Cotswolds fantasy books called Night of the Gnomes, which seems to be going quite well and getting a large number of followers. And I'm also the co-host of Hammer House of Podcast. If you fancy listening to something where two wonderful people, I was selling it there, where myself and Lisbeth Miles watch the Hammer horror movies in release order, that's your one, the Hammer House of Podcast.
Wow, okay. So you're getting into podcasting then. Is that new for you?
We're 5 years in. We've been doing this for a long time. We've only got 8 movies left.
Oh, my goodness. Wow, that's going to keep you a bit. What are you going to do after that? Are you going to move on to some other subject?
Yes, we have plans. We're going to do a sequel.
Okay, sounds good. All kinds of good things going on like that. Is there anything else that you're up to that we should be aware of? I mean, you've written Doctor Who, and of course, there's all kinds of new Doctor Who coming.
Well,
any
yeah.
chance you might be getting back to Doctor Who? Are you going to possibly do any of the comics?
Well, I wouldn't be doing. But I've retired from Doctor Who several years back. But never say never, eh? But there's nothing in the air right now.
Okay. Is there any other like TV show that you might like to write for?
Oh, there's tons, but we're going to have to get the bosses to agree to our terms before we can get into any of that. Right now I'd love to write for Lower Decks. I would Strange New Worlds, Foundation. For All Mankind. There's loads I would like to write for.
Wow, so Lower Decks is a really good show because I think a lot of people would like to see your take on that.
Well, thank you. I would love to do one of those. I think it's just the most delightful pastiche.
What about Strange New Worlds? Because I'm a big fan of that as well.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Have you got ideas for that?
So good. Yeah, I mean, yes, I'm not going to share them.
Okay. You want anybody to take them away from you, huh?
Well, it's not so much that. It's that I think a lot of writers have this feeling. As soon as you start telling an idea to the world, it's like the energy goes out of it. It's like you've told it. I will wait for the appropriate time to tell it.
Okay, sounds good. I like the Alex Segura described the comic. He said it's loaded with heart, plenty of winks and nods, lovely art, and memorable wit. And of course, I've seen Alex at some conventions too, so he probably can relate to some of the stuff that's going on there. So I think that Conan On is going to be another great comic that you've done.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing more that you're going to be doing. We'll have to talk again when there's good things coming on that we can give them a promotion because I always enjoy your writing. It's really good stuff.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And thank you for having me on.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol...
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.